If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Klinsmann gets U.S. job. So he's out the picture now. So it's pretty much all on Aaron Winter to make the decision. And he wanted me to come back. I didn't want to come back. So I stayed an extra couple of weeks because I was mad and everything with how everything was unfolding. And then the coach was like, you know, Celtic organization, like, man, we can't have you train no more because technically we'd be causing all a bunch of problems and breaking rules. So, you know, you can't train moving forward. So I stayed there about an extra week on my own dime because I didn't really want to come back to Toronto. Talking to my agent, seeing what he could have, see what he could do. But, you know, they wanted me back to come play, to basically trade me to New York.
Wow.
Because when I came back now, I said, all right, I'm back. Pay me my money then. Pay me my money then. All right. If you don't want me to go to Celtic and play, and Celtic played in the Champions League, played Barcelona that same year in the Champions League where I could have been playing, I said, pay me my damn money and stop talking no more. I'm done talking.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Crack Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Crack Podcast. I'm so glad to be back with my two co-hosts. Let's get a big round of applause, please, for DeMarcus Beasley and Aguchi Anyehu.
You see how this man started doing the short and sweet intros now? He don't want to do his long-winded a praise to DeMarcus Beasley, number one U.S. soccer player.
You miss it, don't you, Gooch? You miss it, don't you?
Number seven on the field, number one in our hearts.
hold on. I'm still checking text messages. Can we start? Can we do it over?
Oh, my gosh.
No, we cannot start and do it over. Ladies and gentlemen, we're so glad to be back. So much things going on in the football world and life. Gooch runs out the room. This is what we have to deal with on the crack when we broadcast. You know?
Where the hell do you go?
I have no idea. DeMarcus don't have a microphone.
Hey, why you put it out there like that?
Gooch disappears. He thinks he's a magician.
I did tell the people I don't have a mic by this week, but I lied.
You promised the people.
I want to say. But he got a mic in his headphones. That's all good.
Hey, y'all can hear me though, so it's straight. Hey, for real. Next show, I'm getting another mic for real.
Listen, it's going to take an executive to tell you to get a mic for you to get a microphone, because that's what happened with Gooch. I told Gooch for 6 months, get a microphone. Executive said it. Gooch ran to go get a microphone. I tell you, man.
I did it once. I got a mic, but it's in Houston.
But definitely, ladies and gentlemen.
Man, hold on. Gooch, where you just go? You just disappear for like...
Listen,
dude, where the hell you go?
The show kind of conflicted with my baking time. I had to get something out the oven real quick.
Wait, what the hell you bet?
I want to see the final product, man.
Hey, I'm a man of many talents, first of all.
It better not be cookies.
It's banana nut bread, first of all.
Wow. I'm gonna
send y'all some of this banana bread. It's amazing.
I bet it's some baked chicken. I guarantee you some chicken.
Are you gonna play me like that? Come on, man.
hey, listen, man.
Or some salmon or something. Some salmon.
We got a trivia fact. Gooch Anyehu, what's his favorite thing to bake?
Here we go.
Banana bread.
Listen,
ladies and gentlemen, I'm just very happy, right? It's summertime, but also so much football is among us, man. How you guys been enjoying the Euros and the Copa America?
Man, the Copa right now is the final that everyone anticipated, but the final that nobody thought was going to happen, right? We all wanted to see Brazil, Argentina, and everybody's trying to say this is Messi's last chance to win a trophy with his national team. Honestly, I wanted to see Colombia win, to be fair.
Why is that?
Underdogs. That's why. You know, I mean, obviously Argentina and Brazil are the giants, but it's always good to see an underdog go through, just like Denmark. Nobody would have ever thought that they'd get that far, but everyone was rooting for them, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing, the story of Denmark, and unfortunate they had to go out in that type of style, and very controversial. You know, I went through so many text messages and phone calls, and even at the viewing party we have a football, watching the England versus Denmark game, people were arguing back and forth, was it a penalty or not? What do you guys think? Penalty, dive, good call, bad call? We love VAR, hate VAR.
I mean, I didn't see it live, so I can't really give a great opinion on it. I just saw the replay, slow motion, and in slow motion, it looked like a penalty because he stepped, he got contact on his right, and then he got hip checked. On his left, I think. Yeah, on his left hip. So I don't see how that's not a penalty. But I didn't see it live. So maybe it looked like he dove. You know what I'm saying? I'm just going by the slow motion. Like if I was VAR, I would have gave a penalty.
I won't say that there wasn't contact, but there's contact throughout the game. I don't think there was sufficient contact or force. I'm going to always be on the defender's side.
I'm glad you're not the damn
VAR. I'm going to always be on the defender's side.
There wasn't sufficient enough evidence to find this guy guilty.
And this guy, this is B's watching golf instead of the Euros. He ain't even seen the game.
Yeah, we had a game last night. I was literally driving to Cincinnati, so I couldn't watch it
live. All I'm saying is, like, if you watch the whole play, first of all, the defender got beat. Nobody was supporting him. He shouldn't have tried to reach in. But Sterling, yeah, like, did he fall easy? Yeah, but that's his job. When you're in the box, any striker, any attacker, and as a defender, you have to know that that's what they're searching for. So he was looking for it. He got it. They should have known that and been smarter. But for me, the controversy was to decide a semifinals on that call. It's gut-wrenching, especially for Denmark. So I think that's what everyone, if this was like in the first rounds, they'd have been like, yeah, whatever, VAR, doing their job, whatever. But this was such an important game that it's almost like,
and the winning penalty, you know what I mean? Yeah. But listen, I credit Sterling for creating that chance. I mean, yeah, people forget about him dribbling past the first defender and causing him all type of confusion and problems. You know what I mean? And he went down like DeMarcus Beasley does. I mean,
what are you talking about? Does? I don't even play no more. So what are you talking about?
Dive and pick up the other day, DeMarcus. Don't lie.
but the question
we is, need to show some of Beasley's old clips. What was that Mexico game where you were fouled every 2 seconds?
And I didn't die. No, neither one of them. None of them died. I didn't dive. But I got a question for Gooch. But did the defender give the referee a chance to blow the whistle? That's my question. Yes. I'll say,
okay, so there were two defenders in that play. The one that got beat reached in from the back, right? Yep. For me, that was the most offensive. The one that the hip check, he was just running with the ball. So there's no way for him to go. If Sterling is like trying to run in that direction. So unless he just pulls back and just gives him the whole field, like what is he supposed to do?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That was my question. The defender gave the referee a chance to call it. So my point is that
you're always going to have a chance to call when you're touched tight to the player. Like you just said. This ain't basketball. This ain't basketball.
No, you just said it. Put your hands up and let
him
go.
No, but he didn't. The contact wasn't with the hands. He was just running.
I know. It was with his hip. Yeah, it was with his hip. But he did. He put his hip in a little bit, dog.
It was in stride.
In stride.
You don't do this and then just do a hip check and then keep going. Nobody don't run like that.
Oh, man. At the end of the day, congratulations to England.
I will say, before you say that, was he kind of going down already when the hip check came? Yes, I will say that.
I think he was trying to get the penalty from the first defender.
Yeah, that came behind him.
He was falling before he even came to that second defender. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so
I agree with that.
They made history. First final in 55 years, something like that. They broke the curse.
Yeah.
They broke the curse.
What's that? What's that? What's they saying? It's coming home. Isn't that what they say?
It's coming up. All of a sudden, every English fan, it's coming home. It's coming home. Right. Like,
yo, they say that before every tournament.
It's been a runaway child for years. That bastard ain't want to come home.
What do you think was the outstanding player for England?
Sterling. He's been the player of the tournament right now.
The tournament?
I mean,
really?
Honestly,
I don't know.
Yeah, I'm saying coming into this tournament, he had a lot of naysayers in terms of his performance with the national team, club team.
Well, more so because he wasn't really playing at City. Yeah, he didn't.
Exactly.
He
that's what I'm saying. And
yeah.
He quieted them. He was the deciding factor in a lot of their games, whether he scored goals, caused the fouls, the penalties, the assists. I mean, he's been all over the field.
Yeah, he has been influential. I'll agree with that. And then to have the season not go, or his club season not go the way he wanted it to, and a lot of fans, like, obviously I'm a Man City fan, so to not see him in some of the biggest games, I know he started the final of the Champions League, but before that, you know, he was coming off the bench, you know, the last couple
of
months.
What do you think in terms of the coach to play him, even though he knows he hasn't been playing?
That's trust. You know, he trusts his player. You trust that, you know, Sterling can get the job done for him. And he's proven that, you know, I think he's earned that right in an England shirt to have that trust.
What's the young boy at City that's playing ahead of
him? Foden.
Foden. He wasn't playing Foden instead of it. You think that obviously it turned out to be the right decision, but like as a coach.
Exactly. I mean, you look at Foden in a year he had, you know, basically playing every big game in City, and you know, you see that momentum. Well, you as a player, you want that momentum going from the club team to the national team. You want to, you know, obviously be able to start and be an important part of the national team or in this Euro. And you know, he was in and out of the lineup. You know, I know he came on in the second half, but you know, so it's vice versa. You know, Sterling didn't really play at City towards the end of the season, but he started with England. And then Phil, he was starting with City, but then didn't get a chance. You know, well, he got a chance, but he didn't play as much as I'm sure you liked it with England. So, but yeah, that's all the coach. You know, you gotta tip your hat to him and say he got it right.
You got it right now, but he looks like a genius. What if
he does.
Got that wrong? you'd have Mookie saying a lot more right now, talking about kick him out, he's trash. All sorts of Mookie's that Twitter troll that like creates five different accounts just to talk about the English national team.
But yo, but what do you think, guys, think about Italy and they amazing run, undefeated? The job Mancini has done, and also, you know, as a whole, the blend of the young and the elder statesmen on the team. Have you guys watched them and have you enjoyed their play? And do they deserve to be in the finals right now?
Do they deserve to be in the finals? Of course. 100%. You know, I just being a fan of the game, I would have loved to see Belgium go through, but you can't get away from Italy and how they play and how, you know, they just keep going. They haven't really even played their best game this whole tournament, but they always find a way to win. And when you got Chiellini and Bonucci in the back, and you know, those defenders and that experience that you have to when the games get tough and the game's getting, you know, a little bit edgy and, you know, the ball can bounce one way or this way. And that's the tournament. That's the game. They always find a way to, you know, get that last little nick in, or, you know, they're just smart, very experienced players that every, you know, club nation needs. And, you know, I'm sure Italy's happy to have them, but yeah, they 100% fully deserve to be in the final.
I think, myself, obviously, with my ties to Belgium, I wanted them to go through. I was calling them to win the whole tournament. And obviously, unfortunately, they lost to Italy. But I will say Italy of today is not like any Italian side we've ever seen. We've seen the Italian side be very defense-minded and, like, get that one goal. I think this Mancini's team, this right now, they mix the calmness and the defensive structure with the offensive prowess. Like, they can score, they defend, they don't concede, they're dangerous.
Yeah,
I mean, like, for me, it's they're the team to beat right now, and they've been in incredible form in this tournament. So it should be an exciting final. You know, it's Italy's to lose. I'll say that just because, you know, nobody would have ever anticipated England getting this far, especially the way that they opened the tournament. It couldn't even be Scotland. Or was it Scotland or was it Ireland? Scotland. Scotland. So, you know, it should be exciting.
It's going to be war.
Yeah, are you talking about war? Wait till the day before.
Argentina. Listen, we got the finals. Everybody except for Gooch wanted. Right? We finally got it. Argentina, Brazil. Inside of Brazil. I need predictions right now.
Oof. Man, I'm gonna say 2-0 Brazil.
Woo.
I want Messi, because I'm a Messi fan. I want Messi to win a championship for Argentina. I want him to win a final with Argentina. I would love to see that, you know, to get all these naysayers about, you know, he'll never, you know, be that the GOAT or whatever until he wins something with his national team. I know he's done at the youth level, but not the full team. So I would love for Messi to get that. But the way Brazil is playing, I mean, I think they're one of the best teams in the world at the moment, including Euros, the way they're playing. And, you know, it's frustrating for me because I love Neymar and I love how he plays. But when he's in this form and this mood, how he's been in the Copa, there's not many better players than him. I'm talking about Ronaldo, Messi, all of them. I mean, obviously Messi now, not when he was 25 or 20, when he was younger, but just how Neymar is kind of taking over the role of a leader and setting it by example with his play, with, you know, how he's playing, assisting the goals, but, you know, even, you know, some of his dirty work he's been doing, coming back and trying to help the team defend when they need to. You know, right now he's playing some good football.
I'm going to say Argentina 1-0. And I'm just saying this, I agree with you, Bees, that Brazil's in stupid form. Neymar is doing his thing. I think he's matured to the point that he knows he doesn't have to be a one-man show. And he's kind of evolved to that, making it, giving assists, not always trying to score the goal, et cetera, which has in turn been the changing, I guess, the turning point for their team. But I would say right now, the story is written. Like, this is, you know, this is for Messi, right? Like, everyone said this is his last chance. I remember when he retired from the national team and came back. And right now, I think that there's so much emphasis on him winning this and nothing else that I believe that his whole team is playing for him as well, right? And so I'm going to go against you and say Argentina 1-0.
Wow.
And if I lose, I'll bake you a banana bread.
I don't want that shit. I do not want that shit. But I mean, I'm just saying, like, if you go back to that goal that they scored, I think it was against Peru when they won 4-0. I think that's what it was. And it was the ultimate team goal. I think they had about 30 some passes or something crazy like that, some crazy stat like that. Right. But yo, if you go back to that play, and I actually rewinded it like 5 times. If you go back to that play, there was not one pass except for like when they combined it in the middle, Neymar and I can't remember who's in the middle, that they did some kind of like flick. Everything was a 5-yard pass, a simple two touch keep away. That's all it was. That's football for me. I wish I could show my players that and be like, look, this is. Not football's not always like that, but I'm saying, like, just look at this goal and look at how sometimes football can be so simple and beautiful at the same time. Because they literally passed the ball around, moved the ball around. They made a one quick combination in the middle of the field, got it out wide, crossed it in, goal. And it was about 30-some passes. And it was beautiful to see. So I think the form that Brazil is in right now, I don't see them, having a problem. Well, not having a problem, but, you know, not getting past Argentina.
Well, listen, the bookies and the odds have Brazil winning. And for me personally, I think it's going to go to penalty kicks. I'm going 0-0, no goal in 120 minutes.
Yeah, you would say some shit like that.
And I'm going with Argentina winning with the former Arsenal goalkeeper, Martinez, being the hero again. And Messi getting crowned and going out like the champ in the
Yo, the respect that he deserves. Can we mention how Di Maria came on the field in this game and was just dicing people?
Hey, can we talk about the drop? Can you talk about the drop kick that Jesus put on, dude?
What, is that not legal?
Yo, straight up, I was at it's a hockey game, Fort Wayne. Our Fort Wayne Comets won the final. Congratulations. But I was at the hockey game and I'm, you know, checking the scores, seeing the game, you know, with Brazil. And everything was about Jesus. It was on Twitter, Jesus. I'm like, what? I'm like, did he score, you know, a worldly goal or what happened? And I look at the video and not even close. This dude drop kick dude from and I feel bad because I know that hurt. I know that hurt.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, make sure you get your bets in on Bet Online, our sponsor for the show today. Visit the website today or use your mobile device to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. So before the next tip-off, face-off, Euros, Copa America, head over to BetOnline and start playing today. Guys, let's I want to get off the games a little bit and switch topics. Recently, a situation happened for the Olympics, which is coming up actually at the end of the month. But a track and field star for United States, Miss Sha'Carri Richardson, who was a phenomenal and did amazing in the trials and then leading up to Olympics, has now been denied to participate in the Olympics because she was, got detected of using marijuana. Before I ask you guys about it, I just want to get into our segment. And, you know, again, she owned up to it. So I respect. How old is she? 21?
She's 21, 22.
20. Yeah.
21 years old, phenomenal athlete. Recently lost her mother, I believe, a week or so before the Olympic qualifying. And she owned up to it, but she was saying, listen, she used marijuana to help with her anxiety and dealing with losing her biological mother. This is what she has to say.
I know what I did. I know what I'm supposed to do. I'm allowed not to do, and I still made that decision. But not making an excuse.
I mean, how do you guys feel about marijuana and being detected in sports? And do you feel it's right for the Olympics and for the doping agency to disqualify her for using marijuana?
I think it's within their jurisdiction to do so, especially as she just said, I know what I was supposed to do. I know what I wasn't supposed to do, right? So in essence, you're saying I knew the repercussions and I did it anyway, right? And obviously the circumstances, I think that's what everyone is dealing with is, you know, the circumstances she was having the loss of her biological mother. Other issues is, you know, is marijuana a performance enhancer? A lot of people are saying no. A lot of states, including the state that she had it, was legal, right? So there's all these kind of different factors involved in regards to how people feel about the situation and how they don't feel about the situation. For me, they handed out a ban, a fine or whatever. I think it was a month.
One month.
And so the question was, you know, within that month ban, was she still going to be able to run in the Olympics? And the answer is, like, she would, even if she served that month ban, she'd be able to compete in the relay. The 4x10 relay.
They decided to go a different route. But my question to you is it, how do you feel about that in terms of marijuana, which you said is legal? She took in a legal state and it's not a sports, that doesn't enhance her. It doesn't make her, obviously, I don't know how the hell she runs the faster she is and still smokes. But do you feel like the doping agency is behind the times and that needs to change?
But let me go, wait, before you answer that, Gooch, let me go a little bit back. I think for me, in my opinion, is that this reporter told her that her mother died a complete stranger now, told her that her mother died right before she's about to run. How do you think that, I mean, I think you gotta put some kind of, you know, the human part of it. Yeah, context and human part of, you know, what she did and why she did it. Yes, she admitted it. I know she admitted it. She said she did it wrong. You know, she'll come back stronger and she'll learn from her mistakes. But I mean, how would you react to a complete stranger telling you that your mother died? You just ran in a race, you got to the Olympics, and right before that, a complete stranger told you that your mother died. What are you supposed to do?
I guess drink alcohol.
If that was her way of you know, releasing some kind of the anger and confusion of, for one, a stranger telling her that her, you know, her mother passed away, and two, the death of her mother. How are you supposed to react? You can't tell someone that they can't react this way or react that way when something tragic happens. So I'm leaning more toward the human side. Yes, I know what Goose saying about the rules, and a lot of people have said that. I think Dominique Dawes came out and, you know, she was in favor of the Olympic Committee because, you know, rules are rules. But I just look at the other part, the human aspect of it, and I think that's my opinion.
I think if they're gonna do so, they have to be consistent across the board, because there's other athletes that have tested positive for like steroids, the swimmer.
Yeah, but that's a performance enhancing drug. Weed is not.
No. My point is,
oh, okay, sorry.
With those steroid cases, they were kind of overturned. Yeah. They said, okay, I ate something I didn't know or whatever. And there's all these, oh, I had a burrito that had performance enhancing drugs in it. Yeah, okay. Like, I don't know.
Banana bread stuff.
Yeah, I don't know the last time you were at at Taco Bell and they're putting steroids in your enchilada.
Goose, the whole NBA smokes weed. How did the Dream Team and all those guys get cleared to play Olympics?
But now they changed the rule. They don't even test for marijuana no more in the NBA.
Right, but no, it's not even about mixing these rules with that. It's about the consistency of what they're doing. Like, there's nothing consistent across the board. It's like they handpicked when they want to serve or want to make an example out of something.
Yes, right? And I think she was duped, Gooch. I think her being so young, one of her coaches is supposed to be like, hey, listen, don't go in the locker room today. They drug test.
Yeah, and what do you think? And you said, just like you said, what do you think the NBA play? They know. They got somebody to tell
them. They got somebody to tell them, listen, yeah. We're testing today.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I mean,
Go ahead.
No, I was saying I feel sorry for her. I mean, it's terrible. I mean, I remember watching her run on an Instagram clip, and I didn't know, but this is before anyone knew her name. I was like, who the hell is this? Like, running like I've never seen run. And I thought it was just like a prank kind of clip, but like this girl was floating. So not to have her compete at the highest level for her discipline is unfortunate, but I mean, all we can kind of pray is that, like, in 4 years, like, she just tears it up and just makes a mockery out of all the competition.
And another thing I read and I liked is that Nike is sticking by her.
Right.
Nike's gonna stick by her. They said they support her. You know, they see that, you know, obviously she made a mistake, and, you know, she's human. She made a mistake. She owned it, but they're gonna stick with her. And you know, I think that's powerful. I think that's something to be, you know, shouted out, that, you know, a big brand that, you know, their whole image and value of athletes and what they support, you know, could be in question. But since they're sticking with her, I think that's pretty amazing that they are.
Definitely.
But to go back to your question, Mook.
Finally.
Sorry. Yeah, my bad. But yeah, I want to hear Gucci's, you know, his opinion on this too. So do you think, really quick, do you think that the Olympic Committee should change the marijuana policy?
Yes, tomorrow.
Okay. I believe so. They should. Yeah. This situation, this instant needs to be a wake-up call where they have to amend this, because something like this can't be happening.
It doesn't make sense. But ladies and gentlemen, talk about elite, talk about somebody who's phenomenal. I'm excited to bring in our guests for today. This gentleman has played over 18 years as a professional. He's won 4 MLS Cups, MVPs. He won the Gold Cup with Canada. I'm talking about Scarborough's own and finest. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to give it up for Dwayne. Big moment. De Rosario. Wow, God.
Thank you. good. I'm good, man. Long time I'm gonna call you, but I like it same way.
What's going on?
I'm good, man. Thank you guys for having me on the podcast, man. I appreciate you guys.
Nah, big time for us, man. Big time for us. How you been, man? Looking young, looking like bees.
I'm trying, man. Trying to take care of myself. You know, it's hard when you retire. You get fat deposits and
lazy. You get lazy. You get lazy.
Yeah, you get lazy. What's that? Yeah. you get lazy real quick.
Easy.
Good. Definitely, man. But D, I just want to first start off with congratulating you on finishing the book, My Life, which, ladies and gentlemen, you need to go out and go cop. Amazing book. I actually finished it. I ran through my chapters, and it was definitely something enjoyable, inspirational.
Oh, shit. Goose went to go check his banana bread.
Yeah, my bad. Devo, we got a gift for you. We're sending you one of Gucci's banana bread he's baking right now.
Oh, yeah?
You don't want none of that shit. You don't want that shit. Nah. big up on your book, man. I'm still waiting on my copy. So I'm going to send you my address as soon as we get off this the show.
Send B's the audio file because he don't read.
Hey, matter of fact, B's.
Thank God for sports, bro.
Hey, Bees, go to Amazon and make sure you pick it up, man. Stop asking for freebies.
Nah, I'm just bullshit. I'm gonna go cop it. I waited
online and got mine, and I got an autograph. I waited online, man.
I appreciate you, Mook. At least I know one of you guys supporting me.
Oh, I knew that was coming. Yeah, I'm gonna go get it.
Yo, D, so you're on your tour.
Yeah.
Right. What does that feel like, man? I mean, when did you start the book as well?
Where you at now?
I'm in New York.
Okay.
Yeah. So we close off a lot. My last event is on Sunday at the Pelé store in Times Square. So, you know, shout out to the Pelé crew at Times Square for setting up, the closing of the U.S. Tour. But I'll tell you, man, it's been a great journey from 2016. I started to write my story, and I can't lie. I got about one and a half pages, and I totally got writer's block. Didn't know where to go, turn to from there. I kind of stepped away from it, and a sports broadcaster, well-known sports broadcaster in Canada, Brendan Dunlop, approached me. And he's like, "Dero, man, he's been a supporter of my career, my journey," and he said, "Yo, I would love to write a little bit about your career, write a little bit about your experiences and journey," and it kind of snowballed into, "Man, we should do a book." And I'm like, well, and that's what we did. We met for hours and hours, and you know, he recorded, and I talked about, you know, certain experiences, and had to leave certain conversations to regroup and go over them. So it took, you know, from 2016 to, you know, we had completed last year. So
did the pandemic help you complete it because you had the time to kind of
yes and no. The blessing about it, of the pandemic, was that it allowed me to finish the book, because my father passed away last year.
Rest in peace, Tony, man.
Thank you, man. And it allowed me to finish it, because it would have been finished before that. But because of so many, you know, holdups and backups and print and all that stuff, and people kind of didn't know where the world was going to in that direction, it kind of allowed me to finish off with that piece, because we didn't know, you know, of course, knowing the father that I had, I thought, you know, he'd beat it and make it. But, you know, the heavens had another plan for him. So. So we're here, you know. I've started the U.S. tour. We started in New York. We finished in today in New York, but we went from beginning of May. We went from New York to D.C. to Florida to San Jose to L.A. to Houston, and now back. And man, the love and appreciation that people showed, especially like in San Jose and Houston, a place I haven't been in many, many years. You know, to still see that love and support was truly a blessing.
Listen, before we get started, I just want to give, again, a shout out to your father, Tony, because myself, living in New York and a Caribbean background, I used to hear a lot of about your father in Toronto, you know, the teams and tournaments he started, how influential he was in Scarborough, and I think Malvern as well, and coaching so many kids who didn't really have it like everybody else, man. Tell us a little bit about Pops, man, and and how important he was, not just to you, but into the community that you grew up in?
Yeah, I mean, it's a deep conversation, but, you know, I'll try my best. You know, Pops was a true genius, man. He's a legend. You know, he's my biggest mentor. He's one of the guys that went into inner city kids and took like the bad man and the drug man and you know, or the athlete, just a raw athlete, and say, you know what, I'm going to turn you into a footballer. And he did. And created Malvern Magic, which is the infamous team that, you know, we were very fortunate. We're the first Canadian team to win a major U.S. tournament. You know, we're U.S. indoor national champions, being Canadian. All black kids on the team, you know, well, predominantly. I can't say all, predominantly. But, you know, he just knew how to get the best out of a player. You know, he knew how to motivate. He knew how to inspire. But he also knew how to kick you in your ass when you need it. You know, he also was a very big disciplinary. He was a no-nonsense coach. But he had a lot of respect because of the pedigree and what he was able to manifest. He took kids that had no self-belief, that never kicked the ball, all of a sudden, you know, playing for the national team or playing at the youth national, international level, or get called up for a provincial program, or just creating a hope in himself outside of street life. So, he's a huge mentor for not only myself, but so many kids. I remember, you know, when he was passing and, you know, we kept it under wraps, but when he passed, a lot of people reached out to me and just expressed how influential he was. And, you know, I remember going to Toronto many times during my off seasons and people would be like, yo, Dero, man, yo, Tony's your dad. Like, yeah, he goes like, yo, man, tell him what's up for me. I was like, forget about you, man. Tell your dad what's up for me. You know, tell him, yo, he helped my life. He changed me around. And I've had this conversation with so much people, you know. And, you know, just having that kind of, you know, backbone was definitely a blessing.
Do you think that was one of the things that kind of sparked the whole Dero United and getting involved 100%. On that youth level?
Yeah, the Dero United and the foundation. You know, because him and my dad and my brother, my older brother, Mark, they were really spearheading it while I was playing and doing what I was doing. They were managing it while I was and allowed me to focus on my career and kind of build that foundation for me. So as I retired, I had something to fall back on. So but in terms of that vision of creating a foundation to give back to inner city kids like myself, the inspiration to create a platform through my academy where kids could take the game to the next level, that's 100% my father.
The beautiful part for me is looking at four black gentlemen who had fathers that were so instrumental in our lives and our success. You know, you speak about your father and the foundation and the Dero United, and the same thing with Bees, his father, his brother, with DeMarcus Beasley International. What's the name of your damn program again?
How you gonna try to hype me up? Because they don't even know what it is. Like, wait, what's the name of your damn shit?
No, you can't make this up. You can't make this up.
Wow. You know what? Just skip over that. Go ahead. Man, I'm done with this.
You can't hold that flow, man.
I'm done.
Man, you can't big him up too much, D. Man, you have to keep him a certain, you know.
Keep grounded.
Definitely. But D, I want to take it back to Richmond Kickers days, man. That's the first time I saw you play. You playing with my boys, Kwok and all those guys, and Etienne, all those guys, and Greg Simmons, man. You were just a problem in the A-League. While I was reading your book, it was so instrumental. I didn't realize how Frank Yallop, obviously, is a person who really gave you the opportunity in the MLS. And you guys were former teammates and roommates at the Canadian national team. Do you think if Frank wasn't in the position he was, but taking at San Jose, that maybe you never would have made it to the MLS?
No, I wouldn't say that. I would definitely be in the MLS because I was just hungry. I was driven. You know, Frank just because DC wanted me at the time.
Yeah.
Right? Because I was in that transition. Richmond Kickers had affiliation with DC United.
Right.
So I was on preseason with Greg Simmons, with Adrian Saru, all of us.
South America, you know, you guys went, right?
Yeah, I went to San Salvador.
El Salvador, Central America.
Yeah. So DC actually wanted me. Thomas Rogden was the coach, and they wanted me. But Frank told me on the side, like, listen, I'm getting this coaching job at San Jose, and I want you to come with me. So for me, that was a really no-brainer. But I truly believe because how Frank managed my individuality and my you know, he definitely helped to he gave me a lot of room to express myself and to play. Where probably if I went with another coach, maybe DC with Moreno and all these guys, it probably would have been a difficult, a more challenging transition. But I was ruthless in my venture, man. I was going to make it regardless if it was Frank.
The reason I say that, because the A-League has some great ballers like yourself, right? International among them who had a whole bunch of flair. But at that time, the MLS wasn't really, didn't really respect that type of game. You know what I mean? Yeah. So,
well, if you look at that team, Richmond Kickers, we had myself, we had Anandi Lowe. Great player. Yeah. We had Gary Glasgow, right? We had Gregory Messam. World Cup player. Yeah, you know, Roger Thomas, who's another Jamaican international. Marco Ferruzzi, great midfielder. I mean, we had a solid team. You know, like you said, Etienne Brothers. We had Kwaku. So we had a stacked team, right? So actually, because when I left Germany, I was kind of like in limbo. I didn't know where to go. I didn't know what to do. And I didn't want to play in Canada because I just didn't see a end. There was no next level besides, you know, Lynx and Impact and those teams. And I really wanted to get to the next level. So when Richmond called me, I was like, okay, let me go check it out. But when I saw all those players there, I knew it was going to be a good fit.
Definitely.
So when you speak about, you know, you kind of touched on a little bit that it was a blessing that you went with Frank because he kind of, you know, let you be who you are and, you know, let you express yourself and, you know, have a personality, you know, your personality on the field. So who was D. Rosario? How was it to be your teammate? You know, who were you when you were playing?
Knock you out if you don't practice.
What kind of leeway did Frank give you in those days?
Well, just my style of play. I was very expressive on the field, you know. I was very expressive off the field. If I didn't like the way shit was going, I'm the guy calling out everybody in the locker room, whether he liked it or didn't like it, because I just wanted to win. So I was very vocal on and off the field. You know, me and Frank and Dominic met the other day in San Jose, and he reminded me, like, you know, I remember making subs, and I would look and see who to sub, and you're like, I'm just zoned in on him, like, I'm ready. And he goes, I love that about you, because when you look at some guys be like you know, they're not shying away, like, oh my God, he called me. I was just like, yo, pick me, I'm ready. Play me goalie, play whatever, I'm ready to play. So, you know, sometimes that could be intimidating for a coach as well, right? Having a player that was very vocal is intimidating as well. At that time, being Canadian and playing in the league was difficult as well, right? We're not marketable, you know, as we are now. You know, I just call it the way it is. We weren't really marketing, you know, and right at that time, MLS was really looking at marketable players. But because I guess with what I was able to take advantage of, you know, a super sub role when I first started, you know, having Landon on the team, Frank told me, like, Dero, man, it's going to be difficult because this is their boy, you know what I mean? And you know, and I said, I get it, no problem. You know, you have to do what you got to do to earn your keep, and I got to do what I got to do. So you give me 5, 10, 15 minutes, I'm going to cause headaches for you. And every time he'd pay me 5 minutes, 10 minutes, my only objective was to go on and score. That was it. I wasn't looking to pass the ball. I wasn't playing soccer. I was looking to score the ball. So, yeah, all right, there's another one. And, you know, and sometimes it was frustrating for Frank because sometimes we were winning and he just wanted me to keep the ball. And I'm like, nah, man, keeping the ball ain't going to keep me on this team or for me fighting for a position. Scoring goals is. Yeah. So we always laughed about it in behind closed doors. And he's like, Dero, man, you're making my life very difficult right now. But – I don't think I would have that relationship with another coach if it wasn't Frank, is what I'm saying.
Mm. Makes sense. Goodness gracious. Did you ever, you say, you know, you had to play that super sub because of Landon. Was there any kind of headbutting with you and Landon? Because you guys were both performing, right? So it's like, who wants to be king of the castle?
For sure. And that only got us better. I think I helped him become better, and he definitely helped me become better. Because don't forget, we also had Ronald Cerritos there. right?
Cerritos,
you know,
yeah.
And Cerritos is a good is for me is a world class goal scorer too, man. Mm-hmm. You know, so we've had players coming in. Ching was there. Actually, he was there a little later, but you know, we've always had tough guys waiting in the wings that are pushing up. But regarding myself and Landon, I knew what it was. It wasn't hidden, and I give respect where respect's due. Landon's a great player, you know. So to come off the bench, or for him to come off the bench for me, wasn't an ego thing, because we had a good relationship on the field. It was very competitive. I never once looked, oh, why is he playing, or why is he? I never looked at it like that. I was only looking at myself and taking my opportunity, because I always believed.
Even if he was that young, because how old was Landon at that time? He was had to be like 18 years old, no? 17 years old.
A little older.
He was a little 19, older.
Probably 19, because I was like 21, so he's about 22.
You ain't looking at him like, look at this little boy.
I
like that accent.
You know, this little one. Yeah, there was times that you can't help but have those feelings. But as soon as I had those feelings, I had to push them away, because I knew those weren't going to help me, you know, because I'm a firm believer. If you think negative on someone, when you go on the field and you get your chance, it's not going to work out for you. So I always try to keep it positive and just keep it moving, man, because I knew what I wanted for myself. And I knew, like going back to Mook, what you were saying with Frank, I wasn't going to let Landon, Frank, I wasn't let nobody stop me, because I was where I wanted to be, in a position where I could show my talent and ability in the MLS and potentially internationally.
Yeah, I don't think people, well, I know people do. I know we all do, but I don't think some people understand what you just said. You know, you knew that you were, you know, behind Landon. You know, he was kind of they were trying to make him the poster boy, and he was, obviously you said he's a great player, and so, but so are you. But what I got out of what you just said is that you didn't focus on that. You focused on yourself. And a lot of players will always, how many times we've all talked to players, oh, well, that player thought he was better than me, I'm better than him. And, you know, they worry about what everybody else doing. They worry about somebody else's food. Like, right. Worry about yourself. Worry about what you can do and what you can affect. If that's in the game, like you said, you came in, my job, if I'm going to provide for my family, put money in my pocket and be the best that I can, I'm going to score goals. That's right. What I'm going to do. I'm not going to worry about if Frank is going to put Landon or Ronald or whoever, or they're playing more minutes than me, or, you know, they doing this, you know, and now I'm not doing that. I'm not worried about that. I'm worried about myself. I'm trying to make myself better. And I know what I need to do myself to get the best out of Di Rosario. Man, that's huge. I mean, I know you just kind of whizzed by it, but yo, that's huge. Yo, I mean, so many players always want to point the fingers and say, oh, well, the coach didn't do this, or he didn't put me in because he thinks he's better than me, or I think I'm better than him. No, worry about yourself. Worry about what you can affect.
I mean, at the end of the day, that's the winner's mentality.
Yeah.
Right?
You know what I'm saying? That's why
nobody conditions your outcome except for you, right? Like you said, you can't let a coach change your stars. You can't let your teammates dictate what happens. And I mean, Bees, look, I mean, you're one of the greatest national team players that ever played, right? And I doubt you were ever looking at your competition, because at the end of the day, you were probably saying to yourself, I'm their competition, right? It's the other way around.
I even tell my kids that, I go, if you keep looking at your competition, guess where you're going to be? In the stands, watching them paying for a ticket. So stop watching. Yeah, you can observe your competition, but if you're watching, the only thing that troubled me with Landon was when I looked at the end and I looked at the game sheet and I saw Landon a goal, Landon two goals, and I didn't see my name beside it. That's the only thing that troubled me.
Right.
Like,
right.
Okay, next game, I got to get my name you on got, that. Because
exactly.
I want them to keep mentioning my name, and that's what it is.
Yeah, that's huge, man. It's not you pointing fingers. Oh, well, the coach didn't put me in. That's why I didn't score a goal. Nah. When you get you worry about yourself. Like, make your moment. When you get your moment, make it happen. You get your opportunity, you know, go for it. I think that's huge, man.
Nero, I got a quick question. This might be off topic a little bit. Did you ever wish you played for the U.S. team instead of Canada team? In terms of like the potential outcomes of where you could have, what could have happened, what could have been, because you were saying like, Canada wasn't getting that shine. The players weren't getting they weren't marketable, etc. You know,
that's why he married an American.
Yeah. you know, I'll tell you what though. I remember after a Gold Cup, we were taking the same flight one time, and it was US and Canada on the same plane in the Gold Cup, and Bruce pulled me aside and he's like, yo, man, I would have loved for you to be on our side. So that in itself was a lot of respect. But one thing I have to say about the US, which I have to agree to some respect in terms of, I got to be careful how I tread this line here. Right?
But no, it's the crack. We don't tread a damn line.
Hey, no, you don't got to be, you don't got to tread nothing, man.
So in the sense of how I say what I want to say, but I'm just going to say, you know, the way the US treat your players from outside looking in and how they take care of you guys, and you know, it's just miles ahead of where we were at that time. Miles ahead. So when I'm looking at that and I'm saying, man, these guys got another friendly, man, these guys are playing in this, man, these guys got another game coming up, it's hard not to look at that and say, shoot, you know, what if? But I just looked at that and again started to put pressure on Canada, you know, and started to say, guys, we need to step up. Like we need a nutritionist, man. We need a training facility, which up to date, we still don't have, you know, we need all these things that you guys are doing to help propel the sport in the right direction that right. I guess, I don't know if we value or credit it worthy, but I always say, like, if we want to start doing things the right way, we have to look no further than our neighbors. And that's the US, right? You guys have been able to take, the World Cup experience in 94, 2 years later, you guys build a pro league. You know, we went to the World Cup in 86 and we had a pro league, and that just died after that. That's just, I don't understand how that happens. And that's the NPSL or NASL or whatever it is, the Blizzards and the New York teams were in it. You know, it was a big league at the time. Pelé, George Best, all these players were playing the league. How does that league die after so much momentum has been made? Now you got a question, where's the money going? Right? Mm-hmm. So when I look at the US and I see, you know, constant progression happening, stadiums being built, you know, a lot of focus and energy, hence why 2026 is coming back to North America, you know, and thankfully Canada's a part of it now. It's just time that we need to start putting the same amount of energy.
Why is that always an issue for a first-rate country like Canada? They don't invest.
Yeah, we're first rate in terms of everything else. We're third world still when it comes to football.
Why?
Yeah. I mean, Montreal just opted out, by the way.
Opted out of
Montreal. The World Cup bid.
Vancouver did.
They're like, no, thank you.
Oh, was it Vancouver?
Be good.
We don't want it. We don't want it.
Opted out, and Montreal is on, Quebec is about, is on the verge of possibly opting out. Now, again, three major cities. Right?
Why? In Canada. But tell us, you got the inside scoop, man. You got your ears on the wall. Tell us why these cities that could legitimately support these events, why are they saying, nah, we're good.
Gooch, I got my ears on the wall, but I'm just not listening to the right feedback going on in the next side, because that's on the, they're like a couple doors and levels down from me, so they don't let me in on any conversation. So I could only base everything off of what I'm seeing, right? But I don't know why Vancouver would pull out of an opportunity like the World Cup. You guys have been very blessed, of course, to play with it. You know the spectacle. You know the value and the money it brings to a city. So to not have that and showcase your city and showcase all the amazing things that you have to offer within your city to potential consumers and potential, you know, visitors and people that might travel to your city after that, I don't know.
That's blatant right there. But gentlemen, let's get back to the glory days of Canada, right? 2000. How the hell, DeMarcus Beasley and Gucci, how do you guys allow, I don't know if you guys even played, how you allow Canada to win the Gold Cup in 2000?
Yeah, I wouldn't.
First of all, we weren't even there. Yeah,
now you dated me. Now you dated me.
Gold Cup, I won, so I don't know what y'all talking about.
I don't remember losing a Gold Cup.
Yeah, we did.
Once. Yeah. Like, we ain't going to talk about that one.
I want to talk about that team, that glory, because you know, again, D-Ro, I mean, you guys came in blazing. You beat teams like Colombia, Mexico, Dwight York, and TNT, Trinidad.
Let me tell you why we won that Gold Cup, in my humble opinion, is that before leading into the Gold Cup, we had a big dispute in terms of financial dispute, in terms of what the players should be compensated. And it was the real. It was the first time. Although I was a young up and coming
you know, national team prospect. I was able to see a lot because I was with the national team. A lot of people don't know since 95, 96. Mm-hmm. I was 15, 16 years old when I first started with the national team. But back then, those games weren't sanctioned games we were playing in. However, we never stood together as a unit to fight for anything. And that was the first time we collectively said enough's enough as players. The president had to fly down and talk to us and say, guys, this is a big tournament. We can't pull out now. And we're like, well, this is what we want, and we ain't budging. And then the organization, you know, the Canadian Soccer Association said, okay, you know what, all right, fine. Then we got to do what we got to do. And they stepped up and they said, you know, okay, fine. But that team unity, I'm confident to this day, that team unity helped us because we got past Japan. We were tied with points, goals for, goals against, everything across the board. And we had to flip a coin.
Mm.
Right? And that's how we got out of our group stage. And then after that, it was just, you know, with everything building up in the momentum, it was just, we're just a team that couldn't be stopped. You know, I mean, we beat Mexico, we beat Trinidad, all those teams that you mentioned, and then beating, was it Colombia in the final? Was Ecuador? Colombia? I think it was Colombia in the final.
Colombia.
Yeah, it was like huge.
Definitely, man. So, you know, Devo, one of the biggest questions everybody have about your great career, right? You MVP two times, won 4 MLS Cups, played over 18 years. They always say, how come you didn't play in Europe? But you did play in Europe. And you had, I'll let people read the book to see all the experiences you had on trial since 15 years old going over there. But did you ever had a time where you had an interest in a transfer while you were tearing up the MLS?
Let's put it in different words. Let's put it in different words. Have the MLS blocked you from moving?
Chill, Goose. Yeah, that too. I mean, Blackburn wanted me, and MLS, you know, asked for a substantial amount. I wish they were paying me somewhere close to that substantial amount, right. But that wasn't the case. But they blocked me from going to Blackburn, and that was a disappointing thing. And then, of course, Celtic wanted me, and it was more TFC that blocked me from going.
Can we talk about a little bit? It's raining outside. We got nowhere to go in New York. I want you to walk us through that whole Celtic.
I remember the whispers of Celtic, but it never came into fruition. So I was like, it was just a rumor. It was never real or whatever. But I want to know the real deal, man.
You guys.
so fake. So, it was fake. As far as I'm concerned, it was fake.
Yeah. I met with the GM at the time who was filling in, because there was a big turnover at Toronto FC. And it's in my book. I met with the GM and we had lunch talking about Celtic opportunity. So my agent at the time flew down to meet with them and said, yes, we support him going to Celtic. You know, we think this would be a great opportunity for Dero to go. Okay, cool. So December 26th, I got on a plane and I went to Scotland to travel for Celtic. I went there, I did my thing, I was confident, I was flying at the time, I felt good, and they wanted to sign me, just loan me to the end of the season, right? And then they were like, Dero, at the end of the season, you go back to Toronto, finish out there, or if you really do good, we'll have the option to buy you. Now, at the time, the coach really liked me, and he's like, dude, we want to sign you, but right now, we just can't, because whatever the case is at the time, we can only take you on loan with the option to buy. Aaron Vinter was becoming the new coach for TFC. Klinsmann took over as GM. So when I was over there and you know, Celtic, Beasley played in Rangers. I mean, those fans are crazy. Like, I mean, every training, they're outside the gate videotaping. So word gets around, hey, Dero's in Celtic, what's going on? The fans start to buzz because I was their player. So what's going on here? Why is he over there? So my man that I met with the GM at the time jumped ship and said, I don't know nothing about this. I didn't give him approval. And my agent's like, dude, we sat down, we have messages back and forth. So when MLS caught word of this, shit already hit the press saying that, oh, Dero is, you know, because rumors start spreading. Dero's over there. With you know, took a private plane, went over there, and nobody knew about it, and that wasn't the case. So MLS kind of came in, kind of to save, you know, TFC's behind and said, "Listen, all right, well, Dero's over there, We knew he's over there. We gave him permission to train. Well, TFC said, no, we don't want him over there. We want him back, because the new coach, Aaron Winter at the time, said, I want him back. While this is all happening, Klinsmann gets U.S. job. So he's out the picture now. So it's pretty much all on Aaron Winter to make the decision. And he wanted me to come back. I didn't want to come back. So I stayed an extra couple of weeks because I was mad and everything with how everything was unfolding. And then the coach was like, you know, Celtic organization, like, man, we can't have you train no more because technically we'd be causing all a bunch of problems and breaking rules. So, you know, you can't train moving forward. So I stayed there about an extra week on my own dime because I didn't really want to come back to Toronto. Talking to my agent, seeing what he could have, see what he'd do. But, you know, they wanted me back to come play, to basically trade me to New York.
Wow.
When I came back now, I said, all right, I'm back. Pay me my money then. All right. If you don't want me to go to Celtic and play, and Celtic played in the Champions League, played Barcelona that same year in the Champions League where I could have been playing, I said, pay me my damn money and stop talking no more. I'm done talking. And that's all preseason. I was quiet. I was to myself, didn't speak to anybody. You know, of course, when I went on the field, I did my business. I kept it professional. But off the field, I was just like, don't talk to me unless you have a contract in front of me. Mm. And I did that. And that's how I ended up in New York.
Did you get your money?
DC thankfully gave my money. I had to go to DC into another city to get that respect. So it was full circle.
You were supposed to go to DC from the very jump.
How things work, right? How things work. And and at the time, of course, you know, they're telling me about, they're doing me a favor to sending me to New York because you guys are gonna win it all. You guys are gonna win the champ. You guys win the champ.
Wait. Toronto was saying, we're doing you a favor. This team's going to win the championship, so go there.
Yeah.
Have you ever heard of that?
Man, wow. Man, I was so pissed off. I was like, I want to win the championship in my hometown. That's why I came here. I didn't come here to go somewhere else. But they pushed my back against the wall where I was just like, man, you guys ain't going to play me like that. My city, I respect you guys, but I got to go. And I went to New York. Of course, at the time when I went to New York, salary cap was an issue because New York was doing a little thing and thing, paying heavy appearances for myself because I went there and now I was technically in the DP realm, mm-hmm. right? So they had myself, Henri, Marquez, Timu, Lampier. We're all making top
dollars. Y'all were breaking all sorts of rules.
Damn. how y'all on the same team?
Who was the coach that time? Who's the coach?
Hans Bach. And then they sound like
the modern age Inter Miami.
Right, that Red Bull money boy. Good.
Yeah, I mean, I love doing appearances, I tell you that. That's the first time I didn't mind doing appearances.
Hell yeah. Like,
keep them coming.
they can put anything in contract nowadays. Shit.
Yeah, man, it's hard for a brother in these streets, man. It's hard to just get something that you deserve and trying to find out ways for them to hide in. But you know, from New York, it was something had to give, and of course, it wasn't going to be Rafa, it wasn't going to be Terry, and I was the next guy and kind of chopping block. So I went to DC, which is a rivalry again, which didn't make too much sense to me, and. Yeah,
you go to DC, it's gonna be good for you. You're gonna win the championship there.
That's crazy.
They said every club.
I knew that because what they were building was a young team. So I was mad at the whole transition. I didn't want to go there because me and Henri and Rafa were having a good relationship. We're starting to gel. You know, we just went off a good West Coast swing, and when we got back, the way they managed it, I think wasn't done properly. Even though there's no right or wrong way to manage it, I just thought they could have did a little bit more,
AD. One of the great things I liked about the book, right? Gooch, you get a kick out of this one, is you spoke about your time in Houston, right? And all the success you had, but you was like, man, you know, you go to restaurants, you couldn't even pay for a meal. You go to a sneaker store, all the fans bum rush it. You was there living like an NBA player. And one time you said you went out to a club and you're at the door and they say, oh shoot, Houston Dynamo is here. And they set up a table, give you guys free bottles. When I was in Houston, I had to go visit Bees. We couldn't get into a club because Bees had a hat on. Gooch, I was
levels.
Yeah, but you got to remember when we came there. I mean, we were the biggest thing, right? A new team coming to town. What's happening? And then, of course, from our first game, I think we scored 5 goals. Ching scored 4 assisted on 4. But we were like the new, like we were starting to create, you know, a lot of waves. And then, of course, to win championship and then win back to back, they're like, anything you guys want, man. Like,
yeah, Bees didn't win a championship there, so
we didn't have that same success.
Yeah, U.S. Open Cup though.
We did win the first Open Cup.
They were stopping their players from coming in the club. They're like, wait a minute, you play for the Dynamo? Nah, man.
Gooch, we have money in our pocket. We was trying to play. Go out hard.
Trying to pay the bouncer. Trying to pay the bouncer to get in the club.
Yeah, I said, that's DeMarcus Beasley.
Don't do this to me right now.
Yeah, your Houston was a lot different from my Houston.
All right. But you know what?
I was there. Go ahead.
No, I'm saying, you know, it's funny. I was there the other day, and my publicist said the same thing because, you know, I was walking through the concourse and fans just, you know, started swarming and started cheering my name. And, you know, security had to come. He's like, man, I've never been in a situation like that. I'm like, this is 2021. Imagine what it was in 2006, 2007. You know, it was crazy. But, you know, the fandom in Houston was real. And, you know, and my family was telling her, yeah, that's how we used to be every time we went out. It would be like, you know, can you sign this? Can you sign that? Can you take a picture here? Can you take a picture there? So it's mad love in Houston. I love what they're doing to the stadium. You know, I love to
what
see
it. What are they doing to the stadium? It was hot as hell when I went there. Are they changing something for the stadium?
I'm going to just let D-Roll talk about the good days. we ain't going
to. And what happened? What happened in between D-Roll's day and your day?
it gave me – Beasley's a pullback, man. He can only do so much.
The Great Depression.
Yo, don't talk about our club like that. Come on.
Hey, man, listen, another person I want to talk about also, somebody that you mentioned in your book that we all respect and admire, and he doesn't get
this
enough.
Man, Mookie did a whole book report on this damn novel.
Telling you.
Yo, I'm keeping real with you. I ain't read a book in many years.
He's the only one that supported on YouTube.
But, you know, But you spoke about Ricardo Clark. Talk a little bit about Rico and his game, and how he was underrated as a player and how talented he was.
Yeah, man, huge player and hugely underrated. You know, again, has his own way of unique way of doing things. But when you asked him to do a job, I just knew he allowed me to be the attacking player I was, you know, because I didn't have to do much defending thanks to Rico, you know.
Yeah, you see Banana Bread Man? See Banana Bread Man? Don't burn down the house, Gooch.
He was the cleanup crew behind me.
Yeah.
Man, the way he could read the game and the amount of space he can cover was amazing. And the simple fact that, you know, Rico would win the ball and give it to you. You know, he didn't try to play outside of himself. Clean player, win it, give it to the playmakers and let them do their thing. And, you know, I think that art is kind of a little lost with a lot of teams right now, is having that player that could just dismantle plays and boom, give it to the playmakers, because a lot of 6s and 8s now are trying to be playmakers too. And it's just, you know, that's the old saying, too much chefs kind of spoil the broth. And I find like a lot of teams, you don't find a true 6 and true 8, the guys that just do the dirty work and just give it to the playmakers. You know, sometimes guys win the ball and then they try to make the play on top of it. And, you know, it doesn't always work. That's why you got, you know, playmakers out there. And Rico allowed me to be a playmaker because the trust he had in me was equally the trust I had in him. And
Most definitely.
Yeah, Rico was my roommate before he left Houston. So we were roommates.
Yeah, he's my roommate too. Don't ask him for what time you got to be somewhere.
Oh, no,
Don't ask
him
for what time it is.
Yo,
don't
make sure you, make sure
what's
you have
going on, when's training, when's the game.
Right. Make sure you have an extra phone charger. Make sure you have an extra phone. Make sure you have extra everything, because you're going to forget all the shit in this room. All that shit. Yo, I remember one time, real talk though. I remember one time I don't know where we were. It doesn't matter. And you know, like D-Rose saying, he got his own routine, how he does things. He's the most professional player, that one of the most professional players I ever played with. How he takes care of himself, how he eats, you know, what he puts in his body. I mean, dude he's on another level. I mean, it's phenomenal to see how this dude works. And training.
You got to build him up before he breaks him down.
Seriously, no. First one in, last one out. That's what I do. Like, really, anybody will say that about Rico. But I remember one time we had an away game. And this is the day of a game in the morning. And he had never done it before. So, you know, it's about, you know, 6:30 in the morning. And I just hear, pow, pow, pow. And I'm asleep. You know what I'm saying? And I'm just here. I just keep hearing. Pow, pow, pow. Hey, yeah. And I'm like, what is this dude doing? So I kind of wake up and I look, and this dude is on the floor doing yoga at 6:30 in the morning, trying to get ready for a game. He's like,
I was not expecting that from the sound effects.
No, but listen, he's like,
yeah, what yoga goes dot dot dot.
This is a different type of impression.
No, he was doing these real talk. He was doing like these like pelvic thrusts. I don't know what it was.
Okay,
but he's like, geez, man, I gotta get my body right. I'm like, dog, it's 6:30 in the morning. Go to sleep. He's like, nah. I gotta do this. I'm like, all right, man. Go ahead, do your thing.
Rico.
But that was Rico.
Yeah. But you're right. Rico is a good professional. He's not a player you look at and give you that wow factor. But if you knew a player's in their ability in terms of effectiveness and what they do effectively, he's definitely up there on my list. Any team I play with, I want him on my backbone, you know, because he's the guy that you can always count on, the guy you can always trust, and he's consistent. Mm-hmm. He's consistent. He's barely injured, and he's always consistent. But again, he's not flashy. He's not that player, but he would, if you say, real, mark this guy out the game, he will mark him out the game.
Yeah. I mean, the man made a World Cup team. Started, played.
The man played up in Bundesliga.
Germany
is a great league for Rico.
Yeah.
Yeah, he went to Frankfurt. I'm visiting him out there, but he didn't get his due like he could have due injuries and stuff like that. But D, your publicist just texted me. I know you got to go soon, but before you leave, I want to talk about the parties you guys used to have in Toronto.
Oh, man.
I want to talk about the D-Row Entertainment. I want to talk about the Guzman Brothers.
If it's anything like what happened in Houston.
In the offseason. I need to talk a little bit about that, man.
That's a whole next level.
look, he can't even sit right. Yeah,
he's looking at his watch. He's right? Gotta go. Look at the time, boys. That's all I got.
You got to ask about parties.
Hey, man. But
real quick, before I want to know this, because a lot of people want to know this, is what's next for D-Row? Are you going to lead the charge for Canada? Do you want to get into coaching in the MLS? Do you want to get in the front office? Like what is D-Row getting into now outside of this, the book tour and everything?
Yeah. Well, besides my academy, my foundation, the book tour, I just launched a fund called Poppy, Professional Athletes Private Investment, to help athletes learn about financial literacy and how to invest their money wisely. You know, a lot of us, some of us don't make so good money. Some of us make great money, but it's just teaching, you know, athletes how to invest wisely and to secure their money post-retirement, post-career, because a lot of us only look at the moment, look at all the money and do all the good stuff. But when you retire, you're like, oh, shit, what? I don't got much. And, you know, when you look at the ratio right now for athletes in terms of bankruptcy and stuff like that, after retirement within 5 years, it's astronomical. The percentage, it's like 92%, crazy like that. And, so I'm just trying to do my part to help athletes. That's my next big venture. My academy, we just partnered with Toronto FC. So we're now D-Row.
Congratulations.
Thank you. We're now D-Row TFC. But in terms of coaching, definitely something I would take on in the future. Right now, I got a 9-year-old, so just want to, you know, spend time with them. As you know, as being a parent, it's a full-time job, and you know, I lived my whole career with three of my kids during my career, and it's very difficult to manage. So I want to make sure that I spend at least much time with this one in terms of their career path and their career journey, and supporting them.
Are they all ballers, like pops?
Yeah, well, my daughter's the oldest. She's 23. She's a beautician. She does you know, she's into the fashion world. My son that's 19, gonna be 20 on the 19th. He's in Spain, about to sign over there, which, you know,
just drop that over here like that. Wait, no big deal. My son's he about to sign for Madrid.
He's in Spain. My other son is goalkeeper with Toronto FC. He's 17. And then my 9-year-old is just a 9-year-old, just pushing all my buttons.
Hey, which one of y'all got the police outside y'all door, by the way?
That's me. I don't know. I gotta go, guys.
I knew it had to be one of y'all because I'm in Indiana. It ain't in Fort Wayne.
All right, D, listen, I got to represent for Scarborough, though, right? So same thing you talk about the parties. If you have one DJ.
Man, let it go.
I got my family in Scarborough. If I don't ask this question, you're going to cuss me out. If you have one DJ to play your last party, right? Is it DJ J, Dr. J, King Turbo, or my boy Lindo P?
Can't do that to me, man. You can't. I can't
gotta pick one
of those, man. You can't pick one, man. What the hell are you trying to do? Trying to set me up?
He's trying to kill you, boy.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, I mean, all those DJs is, you know, those are neighborhood DJs. You know, growing up, you know, in the communities, they would be playing community parties as blockos. So it's hard to say, man. Like, I mean, Lindo was one of those guys that, you know, played at our club parties in Malvern.
Yeah. You know, pioneer.
Yeah. So he's very multi-talented. You know, King Turbo is obviously, you know, world champions, you know, from our community, from Malvern.
Yeah.
Play Malvern party. And of course, Dr. J is world renowned Calypso Soca DJ that we grew up with playing when we go to Soca Fest. So it can't pick one of the two, man. And not even mention my boy Notorious DJ Carlos, who's Shaq's DJ.
Yeah,
you know, so, you know, there's lots of talent in Toronto, lots of good DJs. And
so at the end of the story, you can't pick one. That's
what I'm saying. Bottom line.
Hey,
hold up. You said all that shit that you didn't say one.
He said, this guy's great. This guy does block parties. This guy's awesome. I love him too. This guy, shout out. We used to go to school together, you know, about it.
It's not our first rodeo, man. We know how to answer interviews, man. We've been through it already.
Straight up, right?
Hey, listen, though, we all can agree, though. We all have to pick up this book, D-Ro, My Life. All right. Amazon is no excuse. Pick it up. It's a great read. So many things that we haven't even breezed on that he touched in this book. So all the fans out there, if you're a football fan, this man started from nothing and he earned everything he got, man. So congratulations to you, my brother. And salute.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you guys.
I appreciate you coming on the show, man.
Brother.
Thank you, man.
Until next time, I got to hang out with you in Houston because Bees ain't the person.
Yeah, you got to hang on me in Houston. And you guys got to come to Toronto sometime.
Yes.
Cabana.
Yes.
Cabana is a good spot, but I'm going to take you to the hood parties.
Word.
Cabana boy party.
Wait, Gooch said, uh-oh.
Gooch ain't going.
I know. Gooch is all Cabana. That's Gooch.
Gooch, you scared of the hood?
Shirt.
What time is it?
No, but it's clean hood party. It's not like
all right.
Rough.
Hey, this dude said, "Uh oh."
Oh, bro.
Respect.
That's like when I was in Houston the other day. Are we still live?
Yeah. Yeah. Everything is live.
Like, yeah. That's not like. Oh, okay. I was like, Houston.
You're going to change his party.
We had a clean party, and I told one of the players, I ain't going to mention no names, but I went to him, yo, let's check out this party. He's like, yo, man, what's going on? It's 1:30. It's 2 o'clock. Everything's closed. I go, yo, man, relax yourself. Come with me. We went to this outside blocko, and you should have seen people, cars pulled up, and they saw police like, yo, man, maybe this place shut down. Please just have the lights on, just keep going. Go in. I'm like, it's different here, man. Different here. 200-300 people outside partying till 10 a.m. in the morning.
Damn, right. Bees. You ain't getting none of that.
Nah.
Hey, listen, D, again, man, salute to you. Thank you for all you've done. But also, man, we're excited to see what you're going to do next, you know?
I appreciate you guys, man. Keep doing what you guys are doing.
And you cheated in your celebrity game, man. So,
I'm sorry. Talking. Take your licks and go, bro.
All right. Bless up.
All right, guys.
Cool.
Legend.
Gooch. You scared of the hood, Bonk? Hey, man. Come on, man. Look,
we talking about this and that. He's like, yeah, no, no, yo, no. But we're going to take you to the hood.
I said, your first response. Uh-oh. Yo, that's got to be my favorite part of any show you ever had. I got to hear that on replay, dog. That shit was hilarious.
I wasn't expecting him to be like, let's go to the hood. I can't stop laughing.
Oh, man. Gooch, you're a funny dude.
Unfiltered.
you're a funny dude.
Uncut.
Oh, man.
Nah, I love it. He was like, hold on, we still live?
All right. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Yes, man. Another good show. Gooch, please take us out.
Hey, man. A lot of serious topics. A lot of good stuff coming up this weekend with Euros, with Copa America. I think D-Row, you know, like Mookie said, read his book. There's probably a lot of insight into it. I need to read it myself. I haven't got it, but I will. But some of them stories are gems, man. I love getting guests on and then just letting their walls down and just being free and talking to us. You know what I mean? That's the best reaction that we get. So D-Row is a legend, an MLS top 25 of all time.
Easy.
You know, he was before his time.
Four MLS Cups.
Yeah, easily.
Yeah. And the man
he still scored the greatest goal in MLS history, I think.
History. Which one, though? Which one?
No, that free kick.
Oh, the free kick. Yeah. He got a couple, though, B.
Roberto Carlos free kick.
That was dirty.
Easily one of, at least it's top five.
Yeah.
History.
Do yourself a favor to my young gunners, man. Go to his highlights. The man scored against Chelsea. The man scored against Man United. The man scored against West Ham. Any all-star game where the Europeans came over, he banged on him.
I feel bad, man. He was before his time. That's bottom line.
Oh, man.
Before his time.
All you guys missed out a lot of money. You guys came out now. But listen, anyway, it's been real. Beasley, what our listeners, the crack crew, have to do?
Hey, they got to sign. No, not sign. What they got to do?
He thought he had it, too. He's like, I got this.
No, yo, they got to like, they got to subscribe, and they got something else. I can't
rate, show love. And also be a good person, man. All right. Peace and love. See y'all next time.
Peace.
If you have kids or pets, you know stains and odors in your carpet and upholstery are inevitable. But the experts at ChemDry can help. ChemDry removes odors and stubborn stains by sending millions of carbonating bubbles deep within your carpet. ChemDry lifts dirt, urine, and stains to the surface to then be extracted away, giving you a cleaner and healthier home. Call 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com to connect with your local ChemDry and learn about special offers in your area. That's 1-800-CHEMDRY or visit ChemDry.com today.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.